Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, kiddos, here we go. Happy Tuesday. Headlines on Softy and Dick without Dick. Hugh Millen in for Dick, brought to you, of course, by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
We'll do it live.
Lots of news in the NBA. Carmelo Anthony, 65 years old. He's back, signing a one-year deal with the L.A. Lakers. And Steph Curry gets a four-year, $215 million extension with the Golden State Warriors. That's over $50 million a year. It's not bad. Mariners 57-50 after an 8-2 win over Tampa Bay yesterday in Florida.
Yay!
Chris Flexen with win number 10. The Mariners now 14-6 and 20 starts so far with him. The NFL, the Colts, one day after announcing quarterback Carson Wentz will have foot surgery. The Colts saying today that all-pro guard Quentin Nelson also will be out 5 to 12 weeks with the same foot injury. In college foosball, ESPN reporting that Bob Boolsby, the Big 12 commissioner, George Kliavkov, the Pac-12 commissioner, meeting today to discuss a potential partnership, whatever that means, between the two conferences. What do you say we find out exactly what that means with John Wilner, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com right now.
It's time for our weekly Pac-12 conversation with San Jose Mercury News reporter John Wilner. Brought to you by Simply Seattle. Our friends at SimplySeattle.com have the most amazing collection of all things Seattle. Seahawks gear, UW hats, and the largest selection of Sonics gear anywhere in the world. Learn more at SimplySeattle.com.
Sounders are playing tomorrow night. Is that correct?
They are.
Okay, I want you to check out what just went live at Simply Seattle on Twitter. I think you're going to want to have...
Oh, that hat on the left.
Yeah, that's dope.
That hat on the left.
That's like a... That's got 1970s Alan Hinton written all over it.
It does.
On the left. So check that out at Simply Seattle on Twitter. It's on my Twitter account as well, simplyseattle.com. Two new Sounder hats going live right now on the website. Joining us right now on the radio show, courtesy of our friends at simplyseattle.com, it's our pal John Wilner. Johnny, how are you, man?
I am good. How are you guys?
We're good. So Dick Fain is off today. Hugh Millen, who you remember, took the Huskies to Ann Arbor in 1984 and beat the Wolverines on the prowess of his mighty right arm, which the gods blessed as a thunderbolt when he was a baby. And he took it to Ann Arbor, and he beat the Wolverines in Michigan 37 years ago. Our question.
It was just me.
It was just you. Yeah, nobody else. Nobody else played in the game besides Hugh Millen. He's with us today, John, because Dick's on vacation. So my question is this: are we going to see another quarterback walking into Ann Arbor from the state of Washington and beating the Wolverines and walking out of there with a victory on September 11th this year?
You know, I'd be surprised if it doesn't come down to the last 5 minutes. You know, or whoever's got the ball last. I think it should be a close game, probably a little low scoring. You know, you could see something like 24-21, 21-17. I think the Huskies have a great chance. Yeah, it'll be all about turnovers, right?
Yeah, I mean, it usually is, right? That's the biggest correlation. And, you know, I don't know. I just feel like Michigan right now is tall hat, few cattle, is right? Where I think it'd be a sexy win for Washington, be a sexy win for the conference, but I think it's a doable win when you look at the Wolverines and the state of their program.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, Washington certainly has got an easier assignment than Oregon does. And ideally, Washington goes in there, wins that game, and then Michigan turns around and, you know, ends up 10-2 or, you know, 9-3, and that game has a benefits the entire Pac-12 in terms of the postseason positioning.
Well, I just know this, that Jim Harbaugh is under fire big time in Ann Arbor. The story that came out over the offseason about Harbaugh getting an extension but apparently taking a pay cut is the most ridiculous cockamamie thing I've ever heard from a head coach and a major Power 5 program, is if that's supposed to appease the fan base. Hey, we're going to keep the guy, but he's making less money. What do I give a damn? How much money the guy's making? Am I getting some of that cash back in my pocket? So that's number one. But number two, John, I guess from a Jimmy Lake UW perspective, and no disrespect to Bobby Houck in Montana, but the Michigan game will be the biggest game that Jimmy Lake's ever coached so far in his career as a head coach. Would it be a bigger impact on the program and Jimmy Lake if they win the game, or a bigger impact on him if they lose the game?
I would say if they win the game, right? Because my guess is that most people are looking at it, still going to look at it like, you know, Washington's the underdog. The expectation is of close loss, moral victory kind of thing. So the biggest, you know, the biggest impact would be, well, I'd probably say this. Impact results, number one would be a blowout loss.
Yeah.
Number two would be a win. And then number three would be a close loss in that order. I don't think a blowout loss would be a bad, bad outcome, no doubt.
And as we're talking about all these, the impact to the Pac-12 and the conferences and their stature, this is so fluid as to just what exactly the conferences are going to represent. There's reports that the Pac-12 is in conversation with other conferences. John, I'm going to just throw a blank slate to you in terms of the ongoing developments, because it seems almost daily that there's some we read some report, at least some suggestion of something almost tectonic, you know, and it seems like daily news, but just your thoughts about the state of college football, the conferences, and the Pac-12 in particular.
Well, there's a report that Dick Fain is in Waco, Texas right now examining Baylor as a potential Pac-12 member.
That, by the way, that was supposed to stay private, so yeah, let's not let that word get out.
I think the biggest thing is that you can't overreact to any report, especially now. This process, whatever happens with the Pac-12, which could end up being nothing happens with the Pac-12 and everything remains status quo, it is going to take months. There's no real deadline. The earliest Texas and Oklahoma are joining the SEC is in, you know, 2 years, right? Pac-12, it's going to take months. And so you can't overreact to every report of a meeting, every report of interest in one school joining another conference. You got to be very measured about the whole thing. The report today that the Pac-12 and Big 12 commissioners are meeting, it makes perfect sense for them to have some discussions about whether they can come up with some kind of partnership. I would expect that the Pac-12 either will or already has had similar discussions on a preliminary nature with the Big Ten. It makes perfect sense. And it's going to be like this for a while. So I would just caution listeners not to overreact to any piece of news, partly because that news could be false, and also because everything is so preliminary.
Yeah, John Wilner with us, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com. And I agree with you that George Kliavkoff should be listening to anybody that wants to talk about anything. There's nothing wrong with listening, number one. But number two, I would just wonder the real kind of crux of the meeting today. And I mean, the real question is who knows, because nobody was there. So this is just a guess on everybody's part. Do you think it was more about, hey, one person goes in with the idea that they're going to merge? One person goes in with the idea that we're just going to have maybe a scheduling agreement like we used to have in basketball, where we'd play you guys every year in the non-conference, maybe set up another bowl where the Big 12, what's left of the Big 12, plays the Pac-12 every year? Do you think that one of the two, Kliavkoff or Bowlesby, went into this with the idea in the back of their head that, hey, this could be about a merger down the road?
I am skeptical that that would be from the Pac-12's view, right? I mean, the Big 12 is fighting for its survival. The Pac-12 is not, at least at this point, right? Bowlesby wants to keep the Pac-12 together. So he's not going to go into a meeting, you know, hoping that there's some kind of, that the Pac-12 ends up swallowing up his conference, right? My guess is that they're talking about, you know, ways that they could partner on for competitive events that would increase their TV value, right? I mean, the Pac-12 is in an interesting situation because there are no obvious fits if you're going to talk about new members. There's not a Colorado or a Utah out there right now. The Pac-12 needs to figure out how it can increase its strength financially without increasing its membership, because there are no good fits. So, you know, a scheduling arrangement with the Big 12 or with the Big 10 or perhaps some kind of combination of that may be a way to improve the TV value And my guess is that that's what Bowlesby's main motivation is. What can he do with the Pac-12 that's going to help pacify his very anxious members and show that he's looking to find ways to secure his conference's future?
And as we're talking about the Pac-12 bringing in potential other teams, there's always the specter of the academic requirements and whether they're research institutions or on some level pass a certain academic stringent, right? I mean, it's not just about football. But, you know, John, I always think of a situation that is part literal, part metaphoric. It just kind of explains the financial nature of the Pac-12 and other conferences. And it's I think of USC and Oregon State. And in most of our lifetimes, we can remember right there during the heyday of the Pete Carroll era, Oregon State had back-to-back wins against the Trojans. And I feel like, you know, all the rules of the NCAA and all of the revenue sharing, here we are, you know, you grow up as a kid in America, you know, you feel like you're in a free market system, you know, your lemonade stand's better than Timmy's down the street, you can charge 25 cents more. Like there's a free market, a sense of order that we have, and yet when USC is sharing the same amount with Oregon State of conference revenue, how long is it before USC just says, no, I'm going to break away, I'm being saddled by Oregon State, and they do some of the things that we've seen from Oklahoma and Texas, and they depart to be part of a super conference. I mean, that is something that as a Pac-12 purist, I just kind of fear. And that metaphor of USC versus Oregon State, again, it's part metaphor, part literal. But what's your take on where USC may ultimately land on that?
Well, I think you're right, Hugh, that the first thing the Pac-12's got to do, and Kliavkov's got to do, is make sure that his current 12 members are happy, starting with USC. And if that's the case, if the Pac-12 stays together, I think that there's going to be a limited amount of expansion across the country. But it will be very interesting to see if or how this situation gets leveraged by some of the schools, not just SC, but maybe even Oregon, Washington, right? The bigger football brands, to see about the revenue sharing. The Pac-12, you know, did not share revenue equally until, you know, 2012, right? That in the Pete Carroll era, SC was getting more money than other schools based on TV appearances. In the last 10 years, it's been all shared equally. And even though they're not all bringing in the same, you know, they're not all worth the same. So that will absolutely be a discussion that's probably going on at some level behind the scenes. And will continue to go on, is whether the Pac-12 is going to continue to share revenue equally among the 12 schools.
Well,
it's
John,
a huge issue.
Yeah, John Wilner with us for sure. And speaking of revenue, it's a great segue, John. John Wilner again with us, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com. Did you see this gender equity investigation that was done by this law firm? Remember at the Final Four, there was complaining and concerns about how much money the NCAA was spending on the women's weight room facility versus the men's facility, you know, food on the women versus food for the men, things like that. And they were crying foul that they weren't getting as much attention as the men were. And, you know, some would say, well, it's because you're not bringing in as much money. And yet others would come back and say, well, Title IX, they're entitled to exactly what the men get, and they should be spending as much money on the women as they are on the men. So Mark Emmert, the NCAA, went out and hired a law firm, and this law firm said, yeah, there's gross inequalities between how much the NCAA spends on women versus how much they spend on men, and they're even suggesting that they put the Final Fours in the same city and play them at the same time in the same stadium. Where is this all going? Because if the Pac-12 starts to lose their big guns, and if the NCAA just turns into the SEC, some of the small schools that rely on that revenue are going to have a hard time even existing.
Yeah, I mean, the NCAA has called a meeting, I think it's for November, where they're going to have a serious discussion about the current structure, where you have three divisions, right? And I wonder if, you know, we're closer than most people think to having you know, the 130 football schools kind of breaking away a little bit and you know, collecting a lot more money, because why should they support, you know, the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley type of deal? The women's basketball thing, though, is real interesting, because clearly, you know, what the NCAA did is they sold to ESPN a package of like 20 NCAA championships, and women's basketball was included in that package, and the total value is like $35 million. If they had just sold the women's tournament separately, it would be worth a lot more, and it would then have justified the NCAA spending, you know, increasing the expenses to make it a better tournament, closer to the way they run the men's. But they stupidly did sold everything together. I mean, it was, you know, comparatively, it makes the Pac-12 network business model look like a stroke of genius.
I'm sorry. You lost me, or not your fault. I got lost. Repeat the part where you said that they would have had more money had they just sold the women's package relative to what?
To the women's package is part of a group of like 20 team championships that the NCAA sold together to ESPN. If the women's basketball was basically an a la carte offering, the women's tournament, it would be worth much more.
Yeah.
It could be worth $100 million.
But you're not talking men's basketball in that.
No, just the women's. The men's basketball tournament is like $1 billion a year deal.
Okay, okay. So you're talking like maybe like men's soccer, men's baseball, what have you, women's soccer.
Right. All the Olympic sports are sold to ESPN together, and that has undermined the value of the women's tournament if it were sold separately.
Right. Yeah. Well, it just seems like a bad business model, like you're talking about. They got to go out and maximize revenue for those sports, and they're not doing it. And I know this, that women's sports is growing in popularity. There's no question about that. Social media is helping that. And if there's an opportunity for the NCAA or their member schools to make more money off of those sports, then they should absolutely do that, especially if they're going to be asked to spend more money on those sports down the road, which it looks like they're going to be asked to do. All right, man. John, great stuff. Always love having you on. Always spirited discussions. Love the intel. And we'll talk in a week, man. Thank you, pal.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
You got it. John Wilner with us on the radio show. Let's come back and revisit what's happening at the VMAC. Huey, Jamal Adams still holding out. Dwayne Brown still holding out. How much of a mood would you be in if you're Pete Carroll to give a 36-year-old left tackle a brand new contract? We'll come back and discuss that next on Softy and Dick Without Dick. Hugh Milne for Dick right here on 950 KJ.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
The Jamal Adams takes are coming in hot and heavy on the text line. Special Ask You edition, 445-49451 here on the radio show. Brian Schmetzer, by the way, from the Sounders, joining us at 6 p.m. tonight. But outside of the Jamal Adams story, Huey, there's another guy on the Seahawks roster that would like a new contract, and that's Dwayne Brown. He'll be 36 in 27 days from now on the 30th of August. He's been with the Seahawks since the halfway point of the 2017 season, and I asked you, just in general terms, if you're Pete Carroll, John Schneider, what is your interest level in giving a extension to a soon-to-be 36-year-old offensive lineman?
Not high. I think when you hired him in and acquired him in 2017, and then you signed him in 2018, it was a three-year, $34.5 million contract. It had $16 million guaranteed, and you're signing that with the idea that the upfront money and the guaranteed money, you had $8 million signing bonus, and as I said, $16 million guaranteed, you know, this at age 33, that was the assumption that you were riding this thing out to 36 and that you were not going to have a figure above the $13.4 million that he's scheduled to make.
Well,
that's his cap hit.
Right.
13.4. It's $10 million base salary, but then when you prorate all the signing bonuses, but you know that you structured your team based on a 13.35, to be specific, cap hit.
Well, we've seen offensive linemen play very well into their mid to late 30s, right? I mean, Andrew Whitworth did it. Was he, in his 40s, I think, or is 40 right now? Bruce Matthews is a guy that comes to mind that did it for a long, long time. Jackie Slater did it for a long, long time. Lomas Brown as well, but, you know, back in the day. But, you know, we're talking about guys, this is 20, 30 years ago. We're talking about those types of names. You know, remember Ray Donaldson back in the day? I think he was on those Super Bowl Cowboy teams as a center, was in his 30s, maybe even mid to late 30s on those teams back in the day. He may have come after that Super Bowl run, but we've seen players do that before. It doesn't mean Dwayne Brown's going to be able to pull it off. And the fear is, and I look at Dwayne Brown right now, and I see a guy that's very productive at left tackle. I feel very comfortable right now with Dwayne Brown at left tackle. But, for example, the Niners gave Trent Williams an extension. And Trent Williams is signed through his 38th birthday with a $33 million cap hit at the age of 33. So if Trent Williams falls off a cliff, the Niners are going to be in trouble. So do I mind giving Dwayne Brown a one-year deal? No, but what is he looking for? Does he want a four-year extension till he's 40 years old? Because that would make me a little queasy. Another two-year extension, a one-year extension on top of what he's doing now, I don't think I'd have a problem with that. But if Dwayne Brown's looking for a much longer-term contract, I think that's where the issues may start to arise.
Well, he's probably going to get a couple years there just because of the position he plays. And the last time we saw him, he's playing still at a high level. But, you try and structure a team and make anticipations. I don't know. I mean, going back to answer your question, if I'm Pete Carroll, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be real happy about it.
Well, I mean, what do you do, though? Honestly, because the guy's not practicing right now. So, you know, I mean, how long does Dwayne Brown take this? How long does Jamal Adams take this? Maybe when the preseason starts and they start losing, you know, money, when the regular season starts, they start losing game checks and they can get fined, I think, as early as the preseason. You know, we'll see then how serious these guys are. If these guys are still not at Seahawks training camp in a week and a half from now, when the Raider game is played, or 2 weeks from now after the Raider game is played, the Seahawks don't strike me as the type of organization that gets pushed around by anybody when it comes to contracts. If they're holding out, then you know what? Let them rot. They're going to hold out. I cannot envision any scenario, Hugh, where the Seahawks cave or are perceived to have caved to Jamal Adams or Dwayne Brown.
Well, we've already heard a statement that they want to extend Jamal Adams.
Yes, yes.
So we're talking about two different camps here, right? Mm-hmm. Has there been any statement from Carroll or Snyder about the desire to extend and to offer a new contract?
To who? To both of them or to Dwayne Brown? No. I mean, Ian was talking about that today, as a matter of fact. I'm glad you brought that up, because when Pete Carroll talks about Jamal Adams, he does it, it seems like, Huey, with a much more optimistic tone and a much more interested tone. Dwayne Brown, it doesn't come across that way. Dwayne Brown, it comes across as, hey, there's nothing there, sorry, whatever. I mean, Jamal Adams, yeah, something's getting done, we're close, we're excited to have Jamal, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, maybe that just speaks to the relationship.
10 years difference in
their
age.
Yeah, exactly. One guy's 26 and one guy's 36 years old. Maybe that speaks to the relationship between Pete Carroll and Jamal Adams, and that's been a very public bromance, I think, if you will, between
yes,
those two
has.
Guys. There's no question about it, but you just don't hear that same type of tone when Pete talks about Dwayne Brown. So, I don't know. I mean, things can change, but right now I think Pete Carroll and John Schneider would be more tilting towards your line of thinking, that they're not that thrilled to be given a 36-year-old left tackle a brand new deal.
Well, we know if they're going to play hardball with Cam Chancellor,
yeah,
that they'd be willing to play it with Dwayne Brown.
Totally, totally.
And yeah, I mean, you know, getting back to that contract, he's under contract, and it's a team manageable $13.4 million.
Yep. No, it's very manageable for this year, but it becomes unmanageable if Dwayne Brown decides to say the hell with it. And I just wonder at his age, you know, you talked about Aaron Rodgers, by the way, being the kind of guy that would potentially walk away from the NFL, and other people have said that too. He's got enough money, he's married or going to get married to a very rich woman. He's got aspirations after football, which can include hosting a freaking game show. For God's sakes, Dwayne Brown could very well be the kind of guy that says, you know what, I'm 36 years old. I've made it through. I've made a ton of money. I don't have any real injuries that are going to, you know, stick with me for the rest of my life. I was able to survive without breaking my neck in this game or busting my back. Maybe Dwayne Brown's the kind of guy that would say, at my age, it's not worth it unless I get paid a buttload of money.
Yeah, and so we've got the money issue, and then there's the issue of him missing time. And for me, we went through this with Walter Jones, right? And for a left tackle, it's pretty simple. It's like, hey, you know, because there's a new offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Outside zone, who would I block? The end. Inside zone, who would I block? The end. 22 protection, who would I block? The end. Like it, he can handle the mental part of that. He's got enough experience. If there's any downside to that, it would be you'd like to see a rapport developing, a communication rapport with him and Gabe Jackson, the new left guard, who's a talented guy and a veteran. You could see them really building a wall that they handle blitzes to their side and stunts from their side really well, because they're talented, they're experienced, they're smart, what have you. And you'd want to get the very best out of that tandem, the way we saw from Steve Hutchinson and we saw from Walter Jones. But those guys had played together for a number of years. So when Walter sat, he and Hutch could just pick it up right from the jump when he returned. We don't quite have that. So that would be a detriment to the team right now, particularly in light of a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and I think those are great points. I also think that he's got to get in here to start learning this system. Don't even worry about who he's playing next to. The system, right? He's got a brand new play caller. And the Seahawks are the only team in the NFC West with a brand new play caller from last year. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and what's his nuts, Kingsbury in Arizona, right? They're all head coaches, but they're all play callers, all three of them, because they're all offensive-minded guys. They all call the plays for those teams. So the Hawks are the only one in the NFC West with a brand-new play caller from last year. That's why I was so disappointed that the Hawks were not out there for OTAs the way everybody else was, because they could have used as many reps in that new offense as possible, because they are the only team in the NFC West in a close division with a brand-new play caller. Things like that can make a difference. So you're right. I mean, Dwayne Brown's got to get in there and get used to a new tag team partner. He also has to get used to a damn system that's brand new and supposedly a stark contrast from what they had a year ago.
Yeah, but I think from a system standpoint, I think there's other positions that it's far more imperative for the work. Like I said, you know, there may be nuances, but for the most part, how they block, you know, the power play. Okay, if it's power, they're gonna power to him or power away. There's not gonna be anything that he's gonna be taught,
right,
that he hasn't learned before.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, yeah, I look, there's obviously other positions that are way more important, quarterback being number one, wide receiver as well. And, you know, look, I mean, Damian Lewis is making the move to left guard, so we'll probably see Gabe Jackson at right guard. That's the plan for now. And he knows Damian. He saw him play a year ago. I'm not overly concerned about it. I just think that when you have a division that is as tight as it is, I mean, Dick and I are talking about all four teams from the NFC West potentially making the playoffs this year because of the new format in the NFL, that you can see three wild cards in this division. That's how good this division is. And I agree. You know, I look around the NFL, the NFC, and if there's one division in the league where all four teams could make it, it's the NFC West. So at some point, it starts to become a concern. I don't know if you've reached DEFCON 3 yet. You know, it certainly isn't DEFCON 2. The fact that we're sitting here a week in and Jamal does not have a deal yet, Dwayne Brown still hasn't taken a snap. You know, look, I mean, maybe after the Raider game, maybe after week two of the preseason, there's going to be, though, a point in time where this starts to become a little bit of a bigger concern. All right, we're going to break. 49451, a special Ask You edition of Textimonials. Get them in here. Anything goes for Hugh Breedlove, Millen, 49451, the Coors Light text line. Keeping Seattle chill. What's on your mind for Dewey next on 950KJ.com/credit.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon, parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain.
All right, Brian Schmetzer will join us on the radio show at 6 p.m. tonight. We'll talk to the head coach of the Sounders with us on the program right now. Textimonials on the Coors Light text line, keeping Seattle chill, a special Ask You edition of Textimonials, 49451. Hugh Millen in for Dick Fain, who's back tomorrow. Jackson Feltz, what do you got?
A close game in Ann Arbor? That will be a disappointment. Michigan isn't very good.
All right, so now we got Husky fans calling the radio show, texting the radio show, saying anything less than a blowout over the Michigan Wolverines, and it's going to be a downer. I don't know. How did we get to this point where walking into Michigan Stadium and coming out with a win is not good enough?
I don't think that texty speaks for the majority of Husky Nation. I think that the vast majority would take a one-point win and health coming out of that game.
Absolutely, and I'm one of them. All right, what's next?
Hugh isn't wrong, but damn, so much was given up for Jamal. What would you do, Hugh? Extend or just break it off now?
Okay, Huey, you've always talked about not compounding your mistake. What would you do if you were in charge of the world with Jamal?
Yeah, no, I know. And the texty, you know, he put me squarely under the gun, as he should, and it makes me squirm. Look, you know, you study economics, you're in business school, they talk about sunk costs and all the just the dastardly mistakes that businesses make in the name of sunk costs. You know, the sunk cost is the two number ones you spent on him. You cannot undo that. All you can do right now is move forward, and you just forget whether you've spent 10 first rounders on him or nothing. You just say, is this player worth this contract? Now, I think that he can be a better player for Seattle than he was. But given, you know, for me, given the money that Russell Wilson's going to continue to want, DK Metcalf's contract is going to come due soon. I would not have done it, and I'll hold firm. I would not give him that contract. He's under contract for another year. I'd play hardball and then we'd go from there.
Wow. All right.
I don't expect Seattle to do that whatsoever.
Sure.
But I think for a safety, the way he look, Ronnie Lott's worth that money. Ronnie Lott has 63 career interceptions. Jamal Adams has two, and he's halfway through a career. So
yeah, but Ronnie Lott is 62 years old. Oh, you mean Ronnie Lott from 40 years ago, not Ronnie Lott today. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, well, in the last 10 years, he hasn't added to that total.
That was me being a smartass, by the way, Huey, in case you didn't figure that out. All right, what's next?
Eason has a good arm, but is a mediocre quarterback. The Seahawks will eat him alive if he starts against them.
Would you call Jacob Eason a mediocre quarterback, or was he mediocre at UW because of the coaching and the approach that they took with him?
Well, I don't know that he was mediocre at UW. I think there's a lot of things going on there. But he's a very talented guy, and I think with the right system, I think anybody objectively looks at Jacob Eason and say, look, if he played for Frank Reich and he gets in with the system, you know, can he be a Nick Foles with a better arm?
Right.
You know, not a great athlete, but if he makes good decisions and he throws the ball accurately, you know, his arm is unique. He's got a rare arm, so if he can put it together, he could be a threat. I don't expect him to be a threat against Seattle. I think Seattle gets a benefit. And that's not a particular knock on Eason. That's just the state of being a rookie. I mean, John Elway was dreadful his rookie year. And he talked about his first game against the Steelers. And Jack Lambert was the middle linebacker. Remember the toothless Jack Lambert. And Jack Lambert was trying to get in his head the whole time. And Elway jokes. He says, man, in that game, I was ready to say, you can have your money back. I don't need this. I'll go play for the Yankees. I mean, it's hard to be a rookie.
All right. Jackson, what do you got?
Why do you think that most people are picking the Niners or Rams to win the division and not giving the Hawks much of a chance?
Is that the case? Are most people picking San Francisco and the Rams? I know the Rams are getting a lot of love because they went to the playoffs last year, beat the Seahawks, and then got Matt Stafford, so I certainly understand that. I mean, the Niners are going to have to go with a rookie quarterback or a guy that they don't even want around after this year in Jimmy Garoppolo, so I don't know if I see that in San Francisco. I think there's just a lot of people out there here that are waiting for the inevitable decline of the Seahawks and wondering if it's going to come this year.
Yeah, and I think that Seattle objectively didn't really help themselves much. They had hardly a draft. They didn't have a first-round pick. They had 3-4 picks in the draft and not a real splash free agent signing. So you look at and say, okay, this isn't like college. Like in college, everybody, you say, oh, man, the freshmen cannot possibly impact the team as positively as the guys we lost. But in the NFL, you look and you always say, wait a minute, we're a lot better than we were a year ago.
Right.
And yet Seattle, I think, realistically and objectively, you can look at their acquisitions and certainly even compared to themselves in many recent years, they added fewer pieces and relative to the division, they probably helped themselves on paper the least.
There was a story some that Detroit Red Wings fans are upset the Kraken are taking the mascot symbol, Al the Octopus. Know what I think? They can suck the Kraken's tentacle.
Wow, there's a reason why he brings that up.
Which tentacle?
Would you like to know why he brings that up? Because he's quoting the great Petros Papadakis.
Suck the Kraken's tentacle.
That's Texty's attempt to be smart and to actually be clever and force me to play a Petros Papadakis drop.
Suck the Kraken's tentacle.
Which, good job out of you because you got exactly what you were looking for.
He says that as if there's just one. Isn't that
there's many.
Why your Kraken's your mascot? You have to deal with eight tentacles.
By the way, do you know where the world's largest octopus are? Any idea?
Is it octopi?
I believe it's octopus is the plural version of octopus, but it could be octopi. No, but here's the deal. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm asking you. Do you know where the world's largest octopus is?
Get it straight. Come on.
Do you know where it is? You know where they are, supposedly? Huh. In Puget Sound?
Seattle Aquarium.
Elliott Bay, right here.
Elliott Bay.
They're supposed to be. Jacques Cousteau did a special like 50 years ago. The world's largest octopi or octopus are supposedly in Puget Sound. So don't tell me that the Seattle Kraken doesn't fit the nickname because there's octopi and octopus or wherever the hell they are big as hell in our freaking backyard. All right, we're going to break. Headlines coming up. More with Hugh Milne and for Dick Fain next on 950.